This week's Torah Away has been sponsored L'il Nishmas from Shimon ben Reb Chaim Shor.
Yud Ches Tammuz, Wednesday the 20th of July, Rabbi Svi Wanderer, Tevilas Kalim.
I'd like to address the topic of Tevilas Kalim today, and we're going to divide the share into two parts. Firstly, refer to the sources and the Makoros of the Din, and then try and talk about some practical halacha. So, the sources, this week's parasha, that's why I'm discussing this, in parasha Matos after the battle with Midian. So, Hashem instructs Elozar Kohen, Hashem says to Elozar Kohen, and Elozar instructs Anshe Sova as follows: Achas Azohav, as a Kosef, as a Nechreshis, as a Barz, as a Bedir, as a Forest. Five types of metals listed: gold, silver, copper, iron, lead, etc. And the passage says as follows: Kodav Ashiyov Ba'ish, all these various metals, anything that goes in fire, Ta'avir Ba'ish, shall be passed in fire, V'toher, it'll be pure, Ach B'mei Nidol Nischato, but it must be purified B'mei Nidol, we'll see what that means in a moment, V'chol Ashiyov Ba'ish, Ta'avir Ba'mayim, it doesn't go in fire, it'll be passed in water. So just to understand the context, the principal point being made over here is that one has to kasha the kalim, that which they captured from the spoils of the battle of Midian. They had to kasha because of the non-kosher elements inside them, so they had to kasha those which require kashering in fire, with fire, and those which require kashering in boiling water, in boiling water. But as an offshoot of this halakha, we derive the principle of tevilas kalim. The Gemara says in Avodah Zorah, Ayin Hema Beis, says that these words, Ach B'mei Nidol Yischato, B'mei Nidol, what does it mean B'mei Nidol? Says the Gemara, it means Mayim Sheh Nidol Tevelas Behem. It means water that a woman who's a Nidol has to tovel inside. And how much is that? Arboim Sod, 40 Sod. In other words, there's an allusion in the passage, albeit as her is speaking about, primarily talking about the kashering, hagolah, of removing the non-kosher bleus in the kalim. But the Torah also alludes to the fact that b'mei nidol, one has to use b'mei nidol. So the Gemara says, what does b'mei nidol mean? It means water which is fitting for a nidol to tovel inside, i.e. 40 sa'ar, which is a reference to tevilas kalim. There's a big dispute in the Rishonim as to whether this is a out and out drosha learnt out from the Torah, of Dindo Raisa, or if it is an asmachta. Is this b'mei nidol an asmachta, i.e. it's a Dindo Rabbonon, but the Rabbonon found a source in the Torah and they were so made they relied on that particular reference in the Torah to their Dindo Rabbonon, or possibly it's a Dindo Raisa, and Rashi learns it's a Dindo Raisa, it's out and out din from the Torah that one has to tovel kalim before one uses them. There's really two ways to read the words b'mei nidol. The b'mei nidol ischata is translated by the Unkelus as by the Targum b'mei adoyusa. B'mei adoyusa means literally water sprinkling, and that is, if you look in Parshas Chukas, is how we talk about the Parah Aduma. The Parah Aduma is called the sprinkling of the Parah Aduma is called mei adoyusa, water sprinkling. So the Ramban and many others say that really that the basic din of the Torah is telling you that as well as kashering the kalim, you also assume that they are tomei meis, and therefore you need the water or the parah aduma to rectify that problem, and that's what the mei nidol means. Mei nidol means water of sprinkling, as in the hadza is to sprinkle, and that's how the Ramban learns the pasuk, and therefore it's not talking about tevilas kalim. Tevilas kalim is only an asmachta. Rashi learns it means mei nidol, means literally water which is fitting for a nidol to tovel inside. And this incidentally is very nice. Balaturim says that the reason why it's Elozah HaKohen who's saying this parasha, it's a strange thing. It's positive. But Elozah HaKohen, Elozah says, El Anshei HaSovah, to the people of the battle, that you have to tovel all your things. So you have to kasher your things. The Balaturim says the reason why it's spoken to Elozah is because mei nidol means water sprinkling. And that is done by the Kohen, or the Skan Kohen. The Parah Duma is the procedure, is done by Elozar, and therefore Elozar is one who's saying the Parasha. That's clearly indicating that the whole thing about Tevilas Kalim is only Midrabbonon, because Mei Nidol means water sprinkling. But one way or the other, We certainly do have a din of Tzvidas Kelim, whether it's a din deraisa, whether it's a din derabanan, and that Gemara, that topic is discussed in the Gemara Avodah Zarah on Ayin Hei. It's really only half an omer on Ayin Hei on base, so you could really become a mikveh buff in half an hour, hopefully, in the halachas of Tzvidas Kelim, because it's not a vast amount, although it has a lot of ramifications for us. The Gemara per se is only a small section. So if I could just read through a small part of that Gemara and we'll try and bring out some halachas from that. So says the Gemara, based on this pasuk in our parasha, that you have to have kulam srichin tevilah. All these kelim referred to in the Mishnah earlier on, they all require tevilah by Rabbi Masar and 40 Sar, and brings a psukim as a reference, either as an asmachta or as a dinderaisa. And there's some interesting halacha that's written over here. So the Gemara says as follows. Firstly, it's worth noting, Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Rav Baravua, Afiru Kelim Chadoshim B'mashma, the pasuk is also referring to new Kelim, new vessels. Because after all, the Hayashenim V'livnon, because old ones, which you've done the process of Livun, i.e. you've kashered them with fire, K'chadoshim Domu, are exactly the same as new ones, effectively. Once, they haven't got the John Lewis label on, but they're effectively brand new. If you've got a keli from a non-Jew who has, you've now kashed it, kedasa kedin, so then it's perfectly new. And nevertheless, the Torah says, v'afilo hachi bo'i tevila, the Torah requires you to do tevila. And therefore, even though the pasuk is talking about second-hand keli, which were taken from Midian, obviously, once you've kashed them properly, they're equivalent to brand new ones. And if those require tevila, so too, when you purchase a brand new keli, it also requires tevila. That's the first part of the Gemara. Maskevel or Sheshes, which is asked a question, yachi afilu zuzu desar belonami. Very interesting question. He says, if that's true, then all the barber's scissors should also require tevila, made out of metal, it's a keli. So any keli which is taken, which is new and made by a non-Jew or taken from a non-Jew, so it has to be tevila. Explains Rashi, to understand the point, the havamun of the Gemara, which has tevila scissors. So Rashi explains that if once you've kashered something, the Torah requires you to do tevila, so what is the purpose of the tevila? It's not to remove the issa. The issa is already gone. You've already done kashering in hot water or even fire. All the bilias are being extracted from the keli. Keli is just a brand new, effectively, piece of metal. And you've got a tevila. What does tevilin do? What does it achieve? What ends are you getting towards? Are you kashering it? It's kosher ready. Making it tahar? It's already tahar. So what are you doing? You're tevilin for the sake of some additional mila. So in that case, maybe any item, not necessarily which you're going to eat out of, or cook out of it, any item which is bought from a non-Jew might require that elevated status of kashas, a havamin of the Gemara. The Gemara answers, klei suda amurim parasha. The Torah is talking about klei suda, which means that we're only speaking particularly about vessels which are used for eating from. We'll have to see more about that later. One more point now. Omrim Nachman Omar Rav Baravua, Leshon Elabalakuchin. We're only talking about things you buy, as in you own it after you've now got it and it's yours. Avav Sholim, if it's borrowed, if it's loaned from a non-Jew, does not require tzvila. So that's another halacha. And then the Gemara goes on. I don't want to go over the time, so let's just say the last bit over here outside. The Gemara says, Hani klei zechuches, hoya b'chin shtabru yeshlem tekona kechli matchus domi. Gemara said that's a klei zechuches, a glass vessel, something made out of glass. Since when you break it, you can then reconstitute it. Anyone knows about glass blowing? I think you can heat it up and then you can form another keli, where you have to throw all your bottles into the recycling bin. They claim they can make new things out of that, that's what they say. So the glass requires tevila because it displays the same properties as metal. And metal is something which requires tevila, and it can be melted down and formed into a new keli, even if it's broken. So glass also can be reconstituted if it's broken down, as opposed to cheres, earthenware, which once it's broken and it's broken, and therefore cheres does not require tevila. There's a big discussion as to whether glass is derabbanan or deraisa, and the general consensus is that tevilas kelim on a metal keli is deraisa, it's a din deraisa, it's a tevil a metal keli, whereas the tevil a glass keli is a din derabbanan, which they modeled on the deraisa because it displays similar properties. both require bracha, it's worth knowing now. Let's go into some practical dinim. So both glass and metal require bracha. Metal is deraisa, glass is midrabanan. And on a practical footing, and we all notice that when it comes to earthenware, we don't need to do tevila. However, most of our earthenware nowadays is really glazed earthenware. And therefore, when we tovel our china plates, we are doing it because of the glass coating on the plate rather than the internal main body of the plate. And the glass coating is something which requires tevila, and that does not require brocha, because machlokes is whether it requires tevila, but it certainly requires tevila without a brocha. So therefore, in summary, we have different materials. Metal requires tevila deraisa, glass requires tevila midrabanan, both with a brocha. China requires tevila without a brocha. And anything else, stoneware, if one has such an item, stone kalim, wooden kalim, spatulas, something like that, does not require tevila at all. And plastic, the general consensus is it does not require tevila. Of course, it wasn't under discussion at the time of when the Gemara was written, but the general consensus is that once you have a new fangled material which wasn't around, it's not our job to start adding to the list of things that require tevila. We know what Chazal said, and that's it. So the general consensus is that plastic does not require tevila. So now, some practical dinim, and this is not the final halach in any shape or form, so if you have any particular personal shaila worth asking your own rov about it, but there's this point which you mentioned in the Gemara. Gemara said that we originally had a hava mina that you'd have to table scissors and anything which is not even a food item or for eater, not a food utensil. The Gemara says no, clay sudah. Only clay sudah requires tevila. Now that then actually has further ramifications. The first very interesting practical din is that if a person gives a present, if you give a present to somebody else, shlachmonos, and you want to make it a bit nicer, so instead of just giving it in a plastic bowl, you give it inside a glass dish, segmented glass dish, very nice, sweet on that side, sweet on this side. So that item can only be toveled by the recipient and not by the giver. So that's, I once received shlachmonos from somebody, and they put a very nice label on saying, the dish is already toveled, so thank you very much, but they actually have rather misconstrued it in, because number one, they made a brochel about tovel, they can't tovel it yet. And number two, I'm going to tovel it myself. The reason being that when I give an item, give a dish or a bottle with which is for a present, so my purpose of giving that is not for eating. It's not clay sudo. My purpose, my intention is clay matonas. Effectively, in my regard, it's an item, it's a keli, whose purpose is to give it as a gift. And the eating facet of it is only going to come into play when the person receives it and uses it, and therefore I should not, and even though you're putting food into it, so therefore what's happening, the food as well, the food in your regard is only a matana, it's not for eating, and therefore when you give it over, so for him it's for eating, but for you it's a matana. That's what's categorized as that. I said, well, maybe we'll speak about caterers in a minute, you'll try and see how it sort of all fits together, because it's a similar vein.
But if it's just stuff for food,
so it's only for food, yeah. Granted, even a keli, which is going to be used in the future for food only, but in your hands, it hasn't attained that level. Hasn't it reached the stage of being a food utensil? It's a gift utensil. Maybe if we see about place to chora in a minute, maybe we'll try to understand the principle. So that's the case which you're mentioning over here, where a shop table is for the benefit of somebody else. That's actually even more so. It's a problem because in my case, as Mr. Diamond was pointing out, that one could discuss whether since you already put the food inside it, then maybe it's already become a food utensil. In a shop, they may tovel it on your behalf if you've already purchased it, because now it's yours and now it's your clay. But for the shopkeeper, it's in the category of clay sechoira. And clay sechoira means that it's a business item, and therefore for him it's certainly not in the category of tevila. And the point there for me, it's not just a matter that he doesn't need to, but he's not allowed to, because by doing so, he hasn't rectified it. It hasn't yet been getoveled, for want of a better word. And therefore, he can't do it, and his bracha is wasted, and you've got to do it again. That's the case with a shop item.
After you bake it. So,
yeah, then once you've paid for it, then and we have certain shops in the district which are very helpful in that regard. So once, but you've got to buy it first. Once you've bought it, then you're allowed to tovel. So maybe just to bring out this point a little bit more, let's talk about a shliach to or mezakeh to somebody. Is that what you asked? Sorry.
Shopkeeper's a shliach.
Yeah, well,
once you've bought it,
then for sure he can take over. Yeah, for sure. He can take over for you. Yeah. So as shlichus, yeah, you can do it. But the point, Rishlimas Alma discusses in the case of a when you give a matano and you give a shvachmonos with sweets inside it. So he said, can, maybe you can do the same thing you could do for a present on Shabbos. You can't give a present on Shabbos, right? A person can't give a, even if you hold it the air away, you want to say, non-political comment, but if you give a present on Shabbos, you're not allowed to give a present on Shabbos. You can't give it. So that's one of Gzeres Otsa Kasiva. So one suggestion is you give it to a person before Shabbos, you mezakeh it to somebody else before Shabbos, and that way it's now in the hands of the recipient. So regarding a tzvila, sorry? Yeah, oh, very good. So that's why Rav Kivyega said you can also say that I receive it without Kabbalah, 100%, yeah, very good. But if you want to do it in a genuine fashion, you give it to your neighbor before Shabbos, and say to him, I'm mezakeh it to the recipient for Shabbos. So Rav Shlomo Zalman says that when it comes to Tevilas Kelim, not Shabbos, it comes to Tevilas Kelim, he says that doesn't work, he says, because if you were to try and give the keli on behalf to the other person, so he says that there are various reasons why it's not, if number one, he says that who says the person wants it, they might exchange it. So therefore, it's he also, even that doesn't work. So the bottom line is that, of course, in the shop, that you can ask the person, even buy a keli over the phone, and pay with a credit card, and then he can be tovered it for you after you bought it, so yeah, that's probably valid as well. But certainly, before you bought it, you can't have a shop selling saucepans and have a big sign saying the door, everything's ready, every shutness tested and totaled. Yes, I don't know if shutness tests your saucepans, but you can't write it's really totaled. Doesn't work. So let me try and bring out a point a bit more when it comes to caterers. Now, caterers, it should be known that if you go to a chasna, you sit down, you should realize that none of the stuff you're eating from, almost universally, all caterers, none of the things you're eating from has been totaled. Shochara, it's true. You go on a plane, similar points. A person does not usually have to table his items if he's using them for a catering purpose. Why? Because there's an exception called klei sechora. Klei sechora means business items. A business item is as exclusion to klei suda, which Gemara mentions, and a business item is not liable for tevila. So to understand it, and maybe break it down, let's imagine that the caterer does not use his own cups, doesn't use not his own glass, he hires glasses. So Joe Vlogs has a crockery hire company, and Yankel is a caterer. So Yankel hires all the plates and bowls and cups and glasses from Joe Vlogs, and he uses them for a simcha. So it's clear, and it's discussed in the Piskei Teshuvah, that they do not require tevila, because in Joe Vlogs' hands they are business items completely. It's not even a caterer, he just hires out kelim, right? So for him they're business items, and the halacha is that if you borrow a keli from somebody else and it wasn't chayav tevila in their hands, so he's not chayav tevila because it's a business item, you're only borrowing it, you're not the owner, so since you're only borrowing it and you're not the owner and he wasn't chayav to do tevila, therefore you can use it without tovening it. And Piskei Teshuvah said that's certainly the case with crockery and with china plates, where he says that anyway, if you try and do it, it'll be a hefsim merubah, because imagine a caterer comes to the table 800 plates before the simcha and he breaks 130 of them. So he says it's going to be hefsim merubah to try and table them. And maybe there's mockers with cutlery, but so take it slowly. So if the caterer owns them, then even though it's apparently a case where he is now using it for food, but effectively, if you really do the math, the equation really is the same thing, that he's effectively renting out to you the kelim for your meal, and he's also providing food. Therefore, he's really Joe Blog and Yankel together. He's really somebody who's renting out kelim and giving you food provisions at the same time. And therefore, in sum total, it's really klei sechora for him. And therefore, it doesn't require tevila, and that is the common practice as well. That's caterers do not table their items. Yes.
Is there a difference in borrowing and renting?
No. Shela and Schiras are in the same category. It's worth noting, just I don't want to say too much in one go, but if you borrow something from somebody who is chayav tevila, yeah, then it doesn't need tevila. You borrow from a goy, no tevila. You borrow from a yid who has to do tevila, yeah, you have to. You borrow from a yid who's potter from tevila, e.g. a salesman or a tradesman in things, then you're potter as well. That's a very sure point. Right. So the point being that, maybe another point is how I understand it. A storage item, coffee, tea, sugar, you have containers in a cupboard for storing coffee, tea, and sugar. Not the shop ones. You have your own one, nice metal ones. And generally speaking, you don't bring them to the table because they're not really that mechubad that you bring them to the table. So you have these in a cupboard and you take tea out of them. So the main body of opinion is that those do not require tefillah at all. Some say you should, so it's probably best to do without a bracha, right? But these canes don't require why, because they're called clay achson, for storage canes, not for eating out of. What requires tefillah? Something which either you cook in, you prepare food on, or you eat out of. Something which you store food in, albeit it's a stage removed. So it's not necessarily going to require a can opener. Can openers does not require tefillah. You're going to ask me that when you put it in the tuna fish, it starts touching it when it goes around. Doesn't matter, because it's not the point whether it touches food. The point is that it's something which serves the purpose of eating. That's really the point. And therefore, similarly with Klei Sechoira, albeit that of course at this wedding, you're going to be eating food properly out of this food, out of the keli, but nevertheless, it is not in the eyes and in the hands of the owner. It is not for food purposes, it's for business purposes, and therefore it's possible from tefillah. You who borrow from them do not have to be tefillah yourself either. So that's one problem which I... I was thinking about it before I came here. Sorry, Ian, have to think about it. Yeah, it's a good point. But Lechoira is still not Klei Suda in the owner's hands. It may not be a business venture as such, but it's in a sense power of us both. Okay, it's power of us, not Klei Suda or Klei Suda. Yeah, Yeshiva, I think about it.
A yeshiva, does he have to
double count? Yeshiva, Lechoira does, yeah, because for their purpose, there's no business aspect. Probably similar points to what Norman's discovered, and it needs to be looked into. Very good, yeah. Although it's not Klei Lechoira, it's not Klei Suda, it's somewhere in the middle. I believe they do, though.
The dish in the microwave that goes round and round.
Yes, so that's right. Oven trays, same point. Oven trays and the microwave dish. If the standard procedure is not to put food directly on them, even if you do, even if from time to time a person might forget themselves and put something straight on, I believe for a safety, for health and safety reasons, they shouldn't put food directly on the microwave tray. I don't know why not. But so it seems if something which is generally speaking you don't put food onto. Or, for example, a penknife, where you normally use it for household purposes, when you go camping, and for cutting wood, etc. But once in a while, you want to cut the crust off of bread, so you used it once every 10 years. It doesn't require tefillah, because it's to do with its main function. Or Shulchan said its main function is not for eating. So therefore, oven trays, I think it's generally accepted that one should, because you may have bread if you want to warm some bread out, you put it in the oven for a second, even though normally you'd use baked paper. So since it is a meal of hamotzah, you could say, that you do use it rather than completely unheard of, therefore one should do so, but probably without a bracha, probably the understanding over there. As to whether you need to table the microwave itself, we need to discuss in a moment.
You've had a visitor somewhere new, you don't think people haven't heard of him.
No, I see there's going to have to be a part two of this year, very much so. So, okay, if you visit somebody else and they are choshud, not to table. So you go to a relation, somebody who unfortunately doesn't know the halachas properly, or you assume they don't know them, then can you eat out of their kelim? So generally speaking, the answer is like this. There are two points. One, first point, you have to break it down. First point, the crisps in the bowl, are they osa? Is it an osa food now? Put it inside a kelim, which is not... supposed to be inside. Is it made of food osa? That's clear in Tosfos and Avodah Zarah that it's not osa at all. The food does not become osa by doing so. It's not like a treif item where it's become, the item is not treif. So that's the food itself. Now the question is, can you use the keli?
Sorry, even if it's hot?
If it's hot, there's a completely different story. Then it probably have, if the person is, so it depends. If the person is reliable for the kashrus, just not for this keli, then it's fine. If they're unreliable for the kashrus, then you end up with an issue regarding the hot food, 100% right. But cold food item, the item is not treif, but the question then is, can you use the bowl? You making use of the receptacle, i.e. to take things out of there, can you use it? So the principle is you can't, because that's called using it and you can't do so. Rishon Zalman discusses the idea that he says that if you have, for example, crisps as opposed to soup, so crisps don't need the bowl per se. If you don't have a bowl, it'll be all over the place, it'll be a very messy procedure. But crisps or pretzels in a bowl, so they could just as well be on the table. And what you're really doing, you're really just you are holding the item, you're just taking it away from the bowl, you're removing it from the bowl. So Shlomo Zalman seems to indicate that one maybe could be lenient, maybe you're in a sticky situation, and maybe it's a chil Hashem person, so you're not touching anything. Maybe there's grounds to say that if you eat an item, that, like a non-liquid item that does not require the bowl, then it might be okay. But suddenly eating with knives and forks, you're actually using the item rather than removing it from the item. So that is more of a problem. There's a similar story actually with came back very briefly, don't want to go into, but with a matana. If you give a gift, and we said that the giver can't tell you, or the recipient can. So you get this nice plate of Smarties and sweets. So when you receive it, you need to immediately throw it into a bag and then go and table the item. So the answer is no. Now you can use it for the first time to take the sweets out of it and to eat them from there without worrying about tefillah, because you're not really using it, you're just emptying it. You're just emptying it slowly, as I heard in the words of one Rob. You're emptying it out slowly, that's what you're doing really. And therefore, it's a similar notion over here with somebody who's chashash. So let's try and squeeze in a bit more, a few more points now. Labels. Labels on a keli. So that is something which, interestingly, is not so much discussed in the Shulchan Aruch, because they didn't have, you know, it wasn't really relevant. They discussed more the points of chatzitza regarding a barrier of rust or dirt or similar things. We have to now extrapolate to modern day context where everything has 20 labels on it. So what do you do about labels for chatzitza? So obviously a chatzitza, even a small amount must be worried about. However, if it's a small amount, you're not makbid about. Same thing with a nidah. If the amount is a small amount, i.e. the minority of the keli rather than the majority, and you don't mind it being there, you're not makbit, then there's not a problem. So therefore, the first practical relevance of that is that if you have a safety label on something, we're going to talk in a moment about tovening electrical things, but let's assume one does for the moment. So if you have a safety label on something, and it says, and it has, says, please don't immerse in a large body of water. So, if you choose to ignore that particular part of it, you don't want to do it a second time, right? So then you're allowed to leave it on. Why? Because let's say the toaster says, do not cover vents at that due to. So if you leave that on, then you're going to. You want it there because people won't need to see it. That's not number one. Number two, if you're a person is particularly vain and they are quite proud that they have a Harrods or a, I don't know, Fabergé vase, a jug or something like that. So then, a person might want to leave it on in order that everybody should see that they are, that the keli has, my grandmother used to cut out the labels from her clothes, but that's something else. But if you're particularly interested in people seeing your clothes, then that's, your label, designer label, then you can leave it on and that's not a problem, that's fine. Electrical items. Now, try and make it something. Again, I stress at the beginning, it's not the final halacha, and of course, most people have probably already asked the shayla, and therefore should either stick with their pesach or modify accordingly by asking your own rov. But electrical items present a major issue regarding tevilah. Even a plastic kettle, where you might say, well, it's plastic, so what's the difference? But of course, the element, which is not just an insignificant part, and halacha is a marmid, and where it has a small part which plays a major role, vital role in something. So therefore, electrical items, certainly according to some opinions, do require tevilah. Those that say you do not require tevilah base it on opinion of Minchas Yitzchok Weiss. He says that something which is plugged in has a din of mechuba lekarka. So certainly an oven that is built into the ground does not require tevilah. That's good news. You don't need to even machmir, you don't have to tevilah oven. So the Minchas Yitzchok says that so too when it's being plugged in to the sockets is also called mechuba lekarka. And therefore, when you use a toaster or a kettle, you're not actually doing anything. You're not using an item which is separate from the ground. Therefore, it doesn't require tefillah. Moshe says another heter that the bread is edible before you toast it. And therefore, it's not needed for eating. It's just an extra add-on, a tikkun, to add a bit more. And therefore, it doesn't require tefillah. So that's what Moshe says. So kettle, yeah, if you use it for health reasons, now it's strong because you want to have water which is boiled, it might be a different issue, but you're right, but that hat I think is a bit rough for you, I don't think it's necessarily a watertight hat, pardon the pun. So the point being like this, that many say that one should table electrical items. Practically speaking, I personally, many others have done so, you just need to put it inside the airing cupboard for about 3 days to, and it will dry out totally. Of course, it now leads to modern day things get more complicated. The more electrical they are, the more complicated they are. Particularly when you have LED displays, which might tell you how much time the kettle has left to go. And of course, as technology gets more advanced, probably in 10 years' time, we're going to have iPod docks on our kettles, and then we're going to have to work out how to deal with that. But the point being that most modern appliances which need tevilah are quite easy to table and they will survive the course. A Kenwood mixer, you don't have to table the actual thing, you have to take away the pieces, you don't have to worry about destroying that. And there's one very interesting story to end on, a fascinating point. Rabbi Yashiv should be gesund. Rabbi Yashiv has a psak for the Meir Yeshiva, an amazing story, you might have heard it before. There was a psak for the Meir Yeshiva that they were told that, albeit that we said the ovens don't require tzvila and built in, but he said that, not so straightforward. So therefore he said the following. He said, obviously you can't tell this massive industrial-sized oven for 2,000 people for lunch every day. So he said that you have to do the following. You can get a non-Jew to dismantle it to a degree. Somebody who's an expert, you dismantle it. It's one way of dealing with electrical items, by the way. Get a goy to dismantle it. When he dismantles it, then it's now lost the status of a keli. Actually, a yid could do it as well, it's not true. A yid could do it as well, right. In fact, a goy does a question of umen kohen b'shvach keli. You're right, so it's better a yid should do it. A yid should dismantle it, and then it's no longer got the status of a keli. It has to be dismantled to the level that you couldn't fix it yourself, obviously, which probably for most of us is a pretty small level. So they got this Jew to dismantle the oven in the yeshiva, brand new oven, brought in from somewhere in Europe, cost them an absolute fortune, and when they dismantled it, they discovered that it was a reconditioned second-hand oven. They discovered it was completely ripped off. They found that they'd been sold this oven for, it was probably in the region of tens of thousands of pounds, this enormous oven. And they found that they'd been completely swizzled by the company. They sold an oven that had been put together from cobbled together from other parts of old ones, and they only knew about it because they followed Pesach Rabbi Yashiv, they should total the canes, because you never lose out from totaling an extra cane, so don't worry, it gets a bit wet, it'll be fine afterwards. And that's at least much we can squeeze into the half an hour. Thank you for your attention, and have a good day.